Hi, it's David Averin, and welcome to the Why Customers Leave podcast. You know, just a decade ago, you'd never heard the terms blockchain or metaverse, cryptocurrency, non-fungible tokens, and digital assets. Well, now they are transforming how we look at information, what we own, what we don't own, and who's in charge of it. Well, today on the podcast, we're going to take it out of the conceptual and talk about what it all means to your business and the future of transactions and business relationships. I'm talking to the brilliant Pamela Norton, the CEO of Title Chain. She's a legendary pioneer in the development of technology designed to secure trusted interactions and transactions. Get ready to take notes. Let's geek out together because we're all going to learn together. I'm David Averin, and this is the Why Customers Leave podcast. Back in 20 seconds.
Are you ready to future-proof your business? Well, sit back, because customer experience expert David Averin brings you the Why Customers Leave podcast, featuring outspoken thought leaders and business builders as they share their creative strategies for serving a new generation of customers and clients. Listen in, or you can watch the video version of the conversation. Now, here's David Averin.
Hey, welcome to the podcast today. This is going to be a great conversation. You know, there's so much information. We hear so much of talking about blockchain technology and what does that really mean, and cryptocurrency, and although sometimes we conflate the two. But I think for so many of us, it's sort of relegated to those ultra brilliant or entrepreneurial people who kind of get it. And the rest of us are kind of on the periphery. We're thinking this might be the future. Is this virtual reality, which I will tell personally, I struggle with the idea of putting on the glasses because I'm so afraid that my brother's going to like poke me with a stick or give me a gut punch or something because I can't see what's going on. Anyway, whole other subject. But today I invited Pamela Norton. She's an old friend and beyond brilliant. And she's going to help us really understand what it means today. I mean, there's no shortage of futurists who are talking about this, but I want to talk about what this means today. Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. I'll give you a quick introduction so everybody understands who you are. But honestly, like record this or play it back or grab a pen and a piece of paper, because we're going to try and make this really tangible for everybody else. Pamela Norton is an inventor, a creator, ideator, and the CEO of Title Chain and founder of Borsetta Labs, which is a pioneer in technology to enable secure, trusted, decentralized AI and private computation at the edge. She's a proven builder of world-class disruptive technology solutions, specializing in startups and scale growth stages, way smarter than I am, Fortune 1000 companies. She's a founding member of Global Women in Blockchain, the AI Private Institute with Intel and Avast, and voted top 100 women in Web3 Metaverse. Very impressive. Pamela, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's so good to see you. It's always so nice to be back together with longtime friends.
Yeah. I read your background and I'm thinking I was a cheerleader in college. So talk to us for a second. We hear a lot of these terms like Web3 and Metaverse. Start macro and then let's get micro. Give me the broad sense of where we are. And then I really want to bring it back to what do people need to understand about it in business?
Yeah. So I love your intro and I love the little statement behind you that says why customers leave. And why customers will be leaving is they're going to be leaving for a Web3 world. And what that means is that we are going to be entering the internet with our wallet, okay? Our digital wallet. So today we go to all these websites, we give them all of our information stolen. We don't trust anyone or anything, right? So we have no trust, we have no transparency, and our data is completely all over the place, right? We own and control nothing. So that's why your customers are gonna be leaving, right? And if you don't understand we have a money revolution, a financial revolution, and an internet revolution taking place. And if you don't grasp what's happening, because you're so fixated on people talking about crypto and a bunch of guys in their basement spinning up coins and you don't get it, you're going to be disintermediated. You're going to be done. And the technology is here. It's happening. And I want everyone first to just take the word crypto out of your head. Like, just remove it. Okay. Let's just let's just take it out. Take it out.
There's a connotation there of speculative and yeah. all over the place and risky. Yeah.
Right. Right. And bad money always comes in to push out good. Okay. So that's a proven fact historically. It happens, right? All it is we have software that uses a math protocol, smart math, okay? And it's authenticating a transaction without a middleman. It's all the blockchain is doing, right? So with that, you have efficiencies, right? Because we have inefficiencies today because we have all these hands in the pie, right? And all these people taking money, holding our money, right? Paying extra fees, usury fees in many cases, right? For people that need a loan. So now David and I can have a transaction together, right? His phone to my phone. We don't realize that transaction when we do it today has how many people in the pie, right? Taking our money. So if we can just kind of step back and realize the new internet will require our wallets to access it, right?
Sure.
So our wallet will be my identity. You're not going to see my identity. You're just going to know I can go to this website because I'm already a member or whatever, right? So does that kind of help? It's like,
well, but talk to me about how does that, I mean, let me sort of encapsulate and you tell me if I'm getting this wrong. So today, of course, every transaction goes through a technology provider, goes through a bank, but to be fair, that gives us a sense of confidence because JP Morgan Chase or Wells Fargo or something has an internal system that supposedly keep it all private. But when you're talking blockchain, describing it accurately is basically everybody sees everything, so nothing can be cheated, right? Is that a bad way to articulate blockchain?
So there is a public record of a transaction, right? That can't be cheated. This happened, right? But my personal information. So, for example, I created an INFT'd myself, right? That's what we're doing, right? INFT'd myself, right? I've taken back my identity, right? I was born Denver, Colorado. We won't talk about how long ago. So what does that mean? I am a unique person. I have unique DNA, right? I have a unique token that says I was born. I exist, right? So with that, I now am taking back control of my identity, right? My personal information is not on the blockchain, but what's on there is this smart math that referenced that, yes, I was born. The state of Colorado says, yes, on this date I was born, right? So it's a way for us to take back control of our own data, right? Our own information. And the connections we have are one way, not multiple ways, right? So right. My login to a website is verified, but none of my information, personal information. So we have a personal data store. So just think of, you have your iCloud you pay for every month, right? You pay for your Google, right? I'm going to pay for a couple bucks a month for my own data, right? My health data, my identity, right? And then I determine, you know, who I give that connection to say, yes, I want to share my health records, or yes, I want to share, right?
Let me ask you a question though. So, but help me understand. So if you've NFT'd yourself, non-fungible token, you own your own identity, it doesn't mean that your identity is all of a sudden scrubbed from every other platform, or does it just say that anybody tries to do something, they're not verified and you are, right? If somebody tries to impersonate you or use your other data, what does that accomplish to own your own? Because it doesn't scrub the internet, does it?
Right. But it's a way, right now we have single sign-on, right? You know, it's that easy sign-on. But Google and Facebook, they all have your information, right? With that single sign-on.
Right.
So there is an initiative, it's called self-sovereign sign-on, that we have been working on for a long time. There's people that, for the World Wide Web Consortium, that are trying to come up with standards. So I have my own self-sovereign identity, right? So instead of a single sign-on, it's going to be a self-sovereign sign-on, right? So I determine what information I might share with Google or gotcha. I might share with
So Facebook. That's what's in the works right now.
That's what's in the works.
Okay.
And it's significant because it's a game changer for all of us, right? From the standpoint of I own not only my own data, but I own my digital assets, right? And a digital asset could be in a form of a cryptocurrency in my wallet. Hey, mm-hmm. I've got a little Bitcoin or I have some other coins that do a job, just like owning software, you know, it's just like owning shares in a company, right? But I now want to digitize my assets, right? So as a company, I have intellectual capital. I have patents and trademarks and copyrights, right?
Sure.
So we believe that's sort of the first entree of businesses coming in, taking control. So we are a digital asset registry based in Wyoming. Wyoming just passed another new law that recognizes digital assets as an ownership right. And we're setting up new companies, right? So you can set up an LLC or an LP or a corporation or a decentralized company, right? And that company can own those assets, right? In a new way. Because right now you have a PDF of a patent, right? You go and try to get a valuation on it. Six weeks later, a company comes back and says, hey, we've done some analysis. I'm going to give you another PDF that says your patent's worth, let's say, $1 million, right? How do I as a business leverage that, right? Right? Because I'll sit there and go to the bank saying, hey, I have this piece of paper that says my patent's worth this. And so what's revolutionary, and this is really hard conceptually for people to understand, is that I now have this PDF that's in my wallet, that's an NFT, right? That says, hey, TitleChain owns this patent. Here's a valuation digitally from the blockchain that says, yes, this is worth $1 million, right? It's a third party validated, right? So now I want to go to a bank. There's new finance opportunities that says, hey, TitleChain owns this. It's $1 million.
Right.
She's got revenue associated because she's licensing this, right? So it's a new way to license software that's cash flowing, right? So now sure. all of a sudden, the opportunities for banks to give money against, it's really, now I've created a hard asset, right, in my wallet.
So, but it's interesting, the dichotomy, though, because as you talk about a digital asset, but now it's a hard asset. Is it a hard asset because it's validated, because it's verified? Is the delta right now the fact that it needs to be recognized in addition to validated for people to understand? Because it's kind of the wild, wild west, right? Everybody owns different things. There's question as to who owns what, repatriating artwork stolen in World War II. Are you saying that the whole digital asset is really a way of a potential universal recognition of ownership and licensure that can be validated and verified?
Yes. And that's the problem we've been out trying to solve for the past 7 years, is it begins with who are you, right? Because we have lawsuits happening. We have people NFTing stuff saying, hey, you can't put that in the metaverse, right? And you have all these brands that are like, I don't know how to operate in the metaverse, but then I have copyrights, I have trademarks that I want to secure. So we title lock them. That's in essence what we're doing. We're saying, hey, you know what? Take back control of your IP. You want to lock them up. You want to validate. We have a reference that says, yep, actually my copyright or my whatever is extended to the blockchain. So any applications that are using my technology, I'm covered as a company, as well as the metaverse, right? So it's a way to get ahead of this tsunami that's going to happen. And that's why we've been focused on IP, intellectual capital, because that's where it all begins for companies, right?
But I think also what you do is I think you lend a significant layer of credibility. I think when most people outside of the people in the know, like yourself, who think NFTs are thinking like, why do I care if I can own this cartoon? Why do I care if I can own a tweet? The future isn't, I mean, there'll be a few who will speculate within that space. We're talking about real intellectual property for organizations to be able to confidently move forward with transactions and interactions, relationships, because things are documented and validated and verified. Yes?
Correct. And this will help us accelerate the marketplace because companies are taking back their intellectual capital, and then they're determining how they want to license that. So, so they can attach smart contracts that say, hey, all right, David, I'm going to license, you know, my IP to you for the next year. We have a contract. You have a wallet. You've been credentialed. You have the product activation ID. Your wallet every month pays mine, right? So what does it matter? Do I want to be paid in something that's pegged to the US dollar or something that's, you know, I want to be paid in Bitcoin? It's just a money conversion.
Sure.
It's what we've done for centuries, right? It's, you know,
it's just the next generation. But is part of the value of that being able to, because I'm one who has intellectual property myself.
Yeah.
I have assets that I license. I have my Morning Huddle video series. Does it also give you the ability to turn that off at the end of a contracted period?
Yeah. So it's all in what you agreed upon, right?
Right.
So you're like, hey, the terms are done. We're over, right? Maybe it's a new one. You say, hey, I'm a little more expensive now. I mean, just think about yourself. You say, okay, I'm David and I have how many hours of time, a billable time I want to go and I'm my consulting or my speaker time, right?
Sure.
So we have a David coin, right? You spin up your own token yourself to say I'm worth, each token is worth $20,000 and I have 10 that I'm going to issue this year, right?
Sure.
So that way it's like everything's encapsulated in that one token with your smart contract. It's a real, we're using real world contracts, right? And that are covered in 160 countries by, you know, arbitration. Precedence law.
That was one of my questions. So this is currently recognized and growing, I would assume.
Yes. So what's interesting about this Ricardian contract that we use, it covers property title rights. And that's sort of the core of our patent is recognizing property title rights. Because when we recognize that, it goes back to, you know, 1800s, right? So there's precedence. So your contract says, hey, you're going to pay me $20,000. This token represents, this one unique non-fungible token represents our agreement, right? So you can look at it. It's a human readable contract you're looking at. And what makes it smart is we embed code that says, hey, Pamela, you're going to pay David $10,000 initially, right? But after he's, you know, presents, the other 10,000 goes in the wallet, right? So again, what we're doing is compressing the business process, right? We're compressing the need for so many lawyers and, right, you know, on all sorts. Right.
Well, that was going to be my question in terms of what problem does this solve? Because right now I'm doing contracts, I'm being paid by my clients. Is it the fact that there's so many other hands or things that might be disputed and this to some extent precludes that? Help me understand what problem we're solving because we're doing financial transactions. We have ownership rights. We have certainly voluminous law, case law that allows for that. The growth of this is coming. It's here. It's going to be the standard. Why? What does it accomplish? What does it solve that currently is at risk or isn't being done well?
Right. So first we ensure that trust, right? So I don't need to call a couple of people saying, hey, is David really who he is and all this, right? You know,
yeah.
So you are who you are. I know I'm paying the wallet that's been credentialed and verified and that you actually own that particular IP or whatever it is that you're going to provide for me. We're automating operations, right? So we're reducing for people those additional expenses of, hey, I got to go out to a lawyer again, or, you know, all sorts of things, right?
Sure.
And reducing reconciliation from accounting and all of that, right? Because the transaction happened. It's an immediate settlement, right? To your wallet. So there's not this, we got to wait for accounting and for, you know, 5-day hold on the money and all these other things. So there's an interesting sort of, efficiency, as well as you're being paid when they said you're going to be paid. You're not like, hey, what happened to the wire transfer and all of that? So people are getting paid faster. You've got immediate settlement. You're reducing, you know, litigious kind of, you know, situations, and you're taking back control. You're the bank of you. And that's right. Why it's so hard. People are like, God, because we always are in debt. We're taught to be in debt. We're not taught that.
But more than that, Pamela, we're taught to trust the experts who know this. I mean, that the devil's advocate would be, okay, if we're eliminating lawyers and accountants, who's protecting our vulnerabilities for right. things that maybe we have a lack of expertise?
Right.
So how does this address that?
And that's what the premise of the blockchain is. It's a machine of trust, right? So I can go back to the ledger, and if I need to come after you and whatever, right?
Right.
It's all documented. It's like, this happened, right? So we will move more to automated bots that will do arbitration instead of having to people have to go into court, you know, so there's going to be efficiencies there, right?
So do me a favor, give me 60 seconds on blockchain. For those who think they understand it, they sort of don't. I've heard a variety of analogies. How would you describe, if you had 60 seconds, here's what the blockchain is?
So to me, the blockchain is a machine of trust, right? So it's, again, in essence, taking smart math, right? It's decentralized, which means you have computers all over the world. They don't know each other, cannot work together because they all have some smart math running. They're called miners, right? And that job of that computer is to solve a problem, to win a prize. They get rewarded to say, oh, this transaction we just had, right? There's a copy of that on that computer over there, on that computer over there, and that. So there's no way to go back and say, actually, this transaction didn't happen. We have that today. We need banks today. We need all of them to say, there's no double spend. There's no, we're paying for all those people to say, right. Yes, right? But now we're actually using machines to do that. And so do we trust machines, right? Well, I trust a decentralized system.
You're saying you trust, maybe not trust one, but when there's 2,000 of them,
yes.
And they all agree. Somebody described it once as, is when you do a major transaction, you're doing it on the 50-yard line of the Super Bowl at halftime. Nobody can deny something didn't happen because everybody knows it did. Doesn't right. mean they know the details, but right. it just means yeah. you can't get away with stuff. Because that's one of the biggest challenges, isn't it?
Right.
Is in today's world, it's scammers. And anytime right. there's money right. somewhere, somebody be there trying to take it away.
Right, right.
Blockchain protects you from that, yes?
Yes. And again, you can still put bad information on the blockchain, right? You can still have sure. bad actors doing things, right? So that's why, again, the problem we have been focused on for some time is, who are you? Verifying that, right? From the standpoint that you are who you are. And what's your company? Verifying your company is, because as we know, a lot of companies come in as front companies to steal IP from US companies, right?
Right.
So, like, hey, not going to happen. Like, either you're credentialed or your shareholders or stockholders are credentialed. So we go through an anti-money laundering and, you know, verification, right? And now I want to license that, you know, particular software. So there is no question that I have the rights as I'm deploying it in the metaverse or whatever. I can showcase on the blockchain of this. This is my product activation. Here's my, you know, my audit trail of I've paid, right? There's no question that I have rights. So it is, you know, an audacious, like, crazy problem we're trying to solve. But I'm so excited today because we finally have the technology in place to really solve this at scale, right? Because that's always the problem is-
right. Well, that's the initial problem is scaling. The other one is adoption and education, yes. which is what you're doing here today and the work that you do with your company. I was listening to, I think it was Gary Vaynerchuk was talking about NFTs. And of course, he's played in that space quite a bit. But he says, ultimately, everything's going to be, so your concert tickets are going to be NFTs, right? Yeah. Which makes a lot of sense, more than the cartoon that you hope will gain in value. That one verifies, yeah, I bought tickets to go see Jack Johnson, right? And those are my tickets. And here's the validation. And nobody's going to steal my tickets unless I transfer those tickets or sell those tickets. Yes?
Correct. And it's just like your airline rewards, all of it. And it's a way to create this so customers don't leave, right? How do you create that stickiness to ensure it's a consumable NFT? All it is one of a kind, unique, happened. I used it. I benefited. So there's-
Does it expire at that point?
Yeah. So at that point, you know, based on the smart contract that said, hey, this has been used, can't be reused again.
Got it.
From a back-end accounting, how much easier that is for companies.
Absolutely. Because, you know, and that makes it much more tangible as well. So help me this. Let's make it a little more micro from the macro. So for those entrepreneurs, business leaders, and others who are listening to this right now, give us examples of I mean, granted, we're going to go through a transition period, but for today, standard business model, restaurant, consultant, whatever those, you know, logistics company, what are the kinds of ways that they can dip their toes into it? What are the initial immediate benefits? What are the kinds of things that they can digitize and validate ownership interest? Give us some examples of how you're seeing that or the work that you're doing in helping facilitate that.
Yeah, so one example we're doing, it's really interesting, is with the veterans in Wyoming. We have a small pilot project on digitizing them from the standpoint of their identity, right? Because again, we have this identity problem. So we're launching what's called Valeo. It's a digital health DAO. And a DAO is just means it's a way for us to launch a new company that everyone becomes a member and is rewarded, right? So these vets get credentialed, right? They take back control of their health records. We credential the doctor. So they have a one-to-one connection with the doctor, and we have an AI agent, right, that is following their health. These are individuals that are suffering from post-traumatic stress,
sure,
you know, syndrome and dementia. So what we're trying to showcase is how can we take back control, the privacy of our health? How can we create an AI tool for them to help them? How do we have a one-to-one connection with the doctor, right, to help them as they are, you know, trying to survive? And then they have a Garmin device. So this is for any company that has some sort of health device or gadget, right? We're all concerned about our data going out, you know, everywhere, right?
Sure.
So in this DAO, all of the data stays in there and we learn from it. And then they get rewarded, they get Valeo points for people that want to leverage that data, right? So the DAO itself will be able to sell the information or will be able to grow. And there's an incentive for them that they get maybe points for special food or nutritional. There's brands can come into these DAOs. I think DAOs, and I don't mean to get way off here, but I think that is the most revolutionary tech that's gonna happen of why customers—
Spell that.
Yeah, it's decentralized autonomous organization.
DAO.
DAO. But what it really means, it's a digital co-op. So it's just like a credit union. So think about a credit union, right? So we're setting up a health digital health DAO for vets right now. So we can help onboard them. We can help them feel that this is trusted there because they're afraid to tell anyone that they're suffering, right? They've been trained. So that's a really exciting pilot. And I think for anyone in the healthcare space, anyone that's providing devices or nutritional or whatever, it's a good way to look at how can I set up my company or how can I set up a new member organization that rewards people. And the data from that we're garnering from that device is not only secured and trusted using the blockchain, but we can monetize it where everyone wins versus, you know, right now, big tech.
Right. Well, hadn't sort of seen conflating, you know, gamification
right
with data, but it certainly, it gives you that dopamine hit, doesn't it? When you're doing something right and doing something you're supposed to do. Is the challenge, well, you tell me, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I'm looking at it in terms of there's got to be some measure of a transition period. Even with the DAOs that you're talking about, it's got to be a supplement to the traditional healthcare that they're receiving. For people who are struggling and people may have some sort of deficiencies, I got to think that there's a bit of reluctance to suddenly put all their faith in something else that's new that they may not quite understand fully.
Yes. Now, I know in Wyoming in particular, there's about 400 DAOs that have been set up. Utah just approved legislation this week for being able to onboard new companies. That you're just kind of wrapping it like an LLC, if you will, right?
Sure.
So yes, it's still early on, but I think 2 weeks ago, there's a new, check it out, it's called Vita DAO. Pfizer just put in about $5 million into that DAO. because they're trying to accelerate innovation on some IP, right? So you can actually put in IP there and you can munch and crunch and learn on all your members in a way that you can't do today, right? Because of legal stuff. And how can we fast track, especially healthcare in this country, in a way that we're taking back ownership, not only of our data, but, you know, so I do see health, anyone in that healthcare space is really interesting.
So you talk about Pfizer throwing some dollars in. The red flags that go up in my mind is who feels threatened by this? You know, when you were talking about, even from a financial perspective, the big financial players, certainly the government who wants their hand in stuff, doesn't like the idea of things becoming decentralized and not needing them, right? The big push against, you know, renewable energies oftentimes historically had been the traditional energy companies. So who's threatened by, we'll talk about the medical side, just because that was your example with the DAOs. Who sees risk in this to their traditional business model?
Well, the two monopolies in healthcare, right, is Epic and I think Cerner, right? They control the entire market. So they're not going to want to lose that control. It's all the big players. I mean, the government right now is pushing the narrative out there that crypto is so bad. Bitcoin, I think Powell just came out saying, you know, Bitcoin's going to go to zero because we're going to launch the digital dollar. And there's just this fundamental lack of understanding of the technology, and that, you know, America always has this unfortunate sometimes position. We're last to accept new protocols when the rest of the world is moving forward. The rest of the world is moving forward. And you just got back from Dubai and they are screaming innovation over there. Absolutely. Right now. I mean, it's just, and we say everyone wants the dollar. And, oh, well, when we do flip the switch, they're going to want the digital dollar. And I'm like, it's an inflationary play. Right. People want a deflationary asset, which Bitcoin is, it's a separate conversation there. But
right. But I think it's important that you noted that, because I think in many people, Bitcoin is the conversation. And is that part of your challenge from a communication perspective of separating out what's happening in the volatility of a particular cryptocurrency doesn't negate the potential, the phenomenal future, I think de facto future of what blockchain and crypto and Web3 and all of that promises?
Yeah, because I'm talking about real world assets. You're going to get a unique token to any of your real world assets, right? And then you're going to have them in your portfolio, in your phone. You're going to look at what's my, you know, hey, I might have $1 million wine collection or whatever, right? I might want to have people buy into that, right? Like, why aren't all of your assets part of your portfolio, right? You get a better loan, you know. So that's the future, right?
That's really helpful. Keep going. That to me is clicking much more so. The whole idea of all these fake assets, you can own a tweet. This is saying digitize the things that you already have to validate ownership.
Right, exactly. I mean, and so I look at, I might own a fleet of Teslas, right? That might be my business, right? I've tokenized all those Teslas for money. They're autonomously picking up people or whatever. That I'm going to look, hey, what's my business assets doing today? Because they all have wallets. They're all getting paid, right? They're working for me, right? Or for, whatever type of company I have. So when you think about, all we're doing is taking a software protocol, right? Relating it to, we're creating a digital twin, right? Of that asset. Right. And that asset's going to be cash flowing, right? So I've been in front of Congress. I've been in front of, the select committee. I was in front of, House and Finance. I've been telling this message, trying to get the government to understand what we did with the petrodollar years ago, right? We forced everyone to buy in US dollars, right? For oil. And I said, if you understand, we have 31 trillion in intangible assets. It's a net new that can be coming on chain, right? If we force by default everything pegged to the US dollar, and then people transact however they want later on, right? What happens to, from a GDP perspective, you look at net new assets coming in. I don't understand how they don't grasp that and embrace it, because you're going to have 280 trillion in physical that's going to be going on chain, right?
Right.
So now we have this technology, and what does it matter if you're pegging to a US stable coin or a Wyoming stable coin? You're issuing bonds, you're issuing all sorts of assets, right? That can have more of a hard, tangible ownership. And you have a ledger that's immutable, that's like, hey, what happened here? What happened here, right? You know. So
how much are they driven by what they're seeing in headlines or volatility, Bitcoin? Because, you know, I remember watching, hoping that Congress understands it is a folly. Just watch Mark Zuckerberg testifying before Congress, and you get the sense of how fundamental they don't understand. And you know, when senators saying, you know, well, how are you making money? And Mark Zuckerberg's like, we sell ads. You know, that's how we, you know, but people are, you're doing this, and then they're delivering ads, and people are, well, that's our business. That's what we, you know, and it's, and you just, you know, knock your head. Where are you in that, as one of the messengers, as one of the emissaries for this? Where's your optimism?
So I'm optimistic in that we've just joined the Digital Asset and Cryptocurrency Association. They're probably about 100 plus members strong of American companies here, really trying to work both sides of our government in really trying to educate that it is not a place for us to come from fear. I believe every state should be issuing their own stable coin, right? Because each state has their own assets, right? And that kind of takes us back to how we began as a country, right? It was really state driven and not so much federal money, printing.
Right.
Money,
right, that's true. Right?
And so if we could go more back to that model of, you know, we have, you know, every state has, you know, tremendous amount of assets, and look at creating real value from those, then there's something really behind the dollar. Does that make sense? Right? Because now it's just a printing machine, and we haven't, we went off the gold standard, right? So then it's just floating around. So now if we have these tokenized, these real world assets,
that and it's tied to something,
you know,
value.
And, right. And China sees it. China's been on it for the past 4 years. They're all making deals right now. They're on a new payments rail. The internet has a new payment system. It's called the blockchain. And you have to be able to speak blockchain. It's a language. And our financial system doesn't speak blockchain, right?
Right.
It doesn't. And so that's, we have this translation issue. And that's why you need that stable coin to kind of come up in and out, right, of our traditional world into a blockchain world. So it's, you know, we've been, I think for 4 years, they've been working on the US digital dollar, which, you know, I have a concern about that, but that's for another another day.
Right.
But I do believe that states should issue their own US stable coin and back it to their state assets. And then you have a institutional one that's just the institutions that have a digital dollar to value it. But what would happen if we had 31 trillion in new tangible assets that are monetizable and the people can get better loans? There's more liquidity, right? For companies to say, hey, I need to now go and spend and hire this amount to onboard these new team members to NFT a membership or whatever, right?
Right.
And
so in your mind, this is an inevitability. It's just a matter of what's the process to get there and how long is it going to take?
Right. And we're behind. And quite frankly, you know, everyone that I know in the industry has left the United States because,
right?
And, you know, you remember, like, what did we do with protocols for network protocols, for phones, like all of that? Nokia, everybody was ahead, right? Everyone in Europe is ahead on payments. In Asia, I think Asia is going to explode this year. As you know, Dubai is exploding in the metaverse.
Absolutely.
So they're investing. And we are just fighting and making fun.
And the discourse in Washington, even on the state level, is it's not one that bodes well for progress on any front. But that's a whole other conversation. Yeah. All right, real quick, because we're going a little bit over, but I think it's fascinating. We're going to follow up because I have other questions about Web3 and everything else as well. Quick speed round. So you're talking about what's happening with China and others who are ahead of this. Give me a dystopian view of America screwing this up. What's a dystopian view of us being late and being left behind?
We won't recover, I believe, right? I think we will be like how the, you know, what is it? What happened to England, right? They said the sun never set on a British colony. Like the sun will set on us, right? You look at the Roman Empire, you look at the ego is the enemy, right? That is, and we have this, the almighty dollar. Does anyone understand the almighty dollar? And I'm like, the almighty dollar is not in these transactions, people. It's about the velocity of money. And if people don't want to trade and use your money, you know, you're a third world country. And right. That's what
right. It's the risk of loss of value of what we think is valuable today.
Yeah.
Right. No longer being the, I don't want to say gold standard, but being the standard. Right. What do you think is the most exciting new tech that's coming down the pike that maybe we don't know about yet?
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, can I talk about it?
Yeah.
What's so exciting? Give me a broad sense. We're going to be able to do X, Y, and Z without having to do L and M.
Okay. So you have a box, right? Computer box, right? It's a chip, right? And you can compute on huge amounts of data and you can learn without any of that data coming out. Because today, where the data gets stolen, it gets when it's transferred or whatever. So it's so crazy. It's called homomorphic encryption. So you can actually learn on data that you don't actually take out of the box. It sounds like so crazy and so like sci-fi, but that is to me the biggest. And we can do it at scale. So this new chip that's coming out will be it's being deployed this year. It's an Intel chip. And
quick. And at what point are we going to be able to plug it into our neck?
Yeah, that's
download skills, because like I want to learn to play the guitar, but I just want to download it and then just be really good at it.
Right. And I just want to make sure that before that chip goes in that I own and control that chip. So that's
so that you make money every time Listen, absolutely fascinating. I will freely admit that some of it is still a little bit over my head, but I'm farther along. I think all of us are farther along. Pamela Norton, once again, I want to really quickly give you a plug. You are the CEO of Tidal Chain. If people want to learn more, if they want to get involved, if they want to look at you as a potential advocate partner, how do they get in touch with you?
The best way for me right now is on LinkedIn. So just I'm Pamela Norton on LinkedIn. And that's really the only channel I'm active on right now.
how many other Pamela Nortons? Do you have a website that you can give out?
Titlechain.world. And that's a whole other conversation. Yeah. On how people, will be entering the, that's a whole other conversation.
Cool. No, that's great. It's good. Listen, hang on, because you and I will connect on the other side. I appreciate that. Like a million questions we didn't even get to. So it gives us an excuse to connect again. I just want to remind everybody that you can pick up a copy of my book, The Morning Huddle. I'm going to find a way to tokenize this. Powerful customer experience conversations to wake you up and shake you up and win more business. It all came from a video series I created that is my digital asset. So I'm going to follow up with you on much of this as well. You can also get all of my books. Everything is available on Amazon. Be sure to click to like this podcast. Subscribe. You'll get notifications. Click the little bell icon. You'll get notifications of new episodes when they come out. You can learn more about my speaking, my consulting on customer experience at davidavern.com. Thanks for listening and watching the video version of the Why Customers Leave podcast. Big thanks to my guest, Pamela Norton. I'm David Avern. Be good.
This has been the Why Customers Leave podcast with David Averin. Be sure to leave a comment and click the like button. You can listen to or watch past episodes and be notified of future ones by hitting the subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform or check them out on David Averin's YouTube channel. David's popular books are all available online and also in Kindle and audiobook form as well. You can learn more about David's keynote speaking and business consulting at davidaverin.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.